Lost and Found is a new book about unchurched 20-somethings. The authors are here today. Next on Inside LifeWay. Welcome to Inside LifeWay, the official news podcast of LifeWay Christian Resources. I'm your host, Brooklyn Knoll. The church is a lot of things to a lot of people, but research shows it may not be enough for people in their 20s. In the book Lost and Found, The Younger Unchurched and the Churches That Reach Them, authors Ed Stetzer, Jason Hayes, and Richie Stanley use data from three different research projects, including a 900-person survey of younger unchurched. What they found is that young adults have very specific perceptions regarding the church and why they do or do not attend. The good news is that churches do have options when it comes to how to change those perceptions. Ed Stetzer is director of LifeWay Research, and Jason Hayes is LifeWay's young adult ministry specialist. They are here today to talk about their book and its practical implications. Thanks for being here, guys.
Glad to do it.
Good to be here.
Let's go ahead and start with some definitions that run throughout the book. Ed, I'm going to ask you what you mean by young adults and what makes them unchurched.
Well, young adults, in the case of the 900-person survey we did, it was basically those between 20 and 29, so 20-somethings, who did not go to church, synagogue, or mosque for the last 6 months except for a wedding, funeral, holiday, something of that effect.
Right.
So just functionally people who are disconnected from the church.
Okay. What is it that you mean by spiritual? Because that comes up, that young adults are spiritual people. They're just not in church.
Well, you know, of course, I would say they self-identify themselves as spiritual. Mm-hmm. You know, whether we as Christians would say that they're spiritual, I think that there's a strong perception that they are spiritual, but perhaps not religious. So they have a certain sense of connection that they believe there's a God, and they believe that they are spiritual because they think about spiritual things.
Okay.
So spirituality is big in our culture today, and I think young adults reflect that.
And that could be anything from meditating during exercise to, you know, following a Christian God when they're talking about spirituality, correct?
Yeah, and perhaps, oddly enough, some of both. There seems to be a lot of young adults who believe a lot of the things that Christians say they believe, but they don't necessarily mean it impacts their lives. They believe it, and they believe a lot of other stuff because they're spiritual and open-minded.
Okay. Jason, when you work specifically with young adults, with the Threads ministry here, what do you hear when it comes to spirituality versus religion and Christianity?
Sure. You know, we've all heard the statement where we hear young adults tell us that they're interested in Jesus, but they're not necessarily interested in the church that talks about Jesus. We continue to hear young adults tell us these very things. They tell us that they're interested in relationship, they're interested in depth and community and all of this that we talk about in the book. The catch is that these young adults can often find those things outside of the church as well. The good news for us is, though, that those things aren't they're not far away from the message of the gospel. One thing if young adults came back to us and said, we desire a certain number of things, and we line that up with the scripture.
Right.
We line that up with the character of God and what the church was called to be, and we said, unfortunately, there's just a disconnect. Well, that's not the case. The good news is for us, exactly what they're asking for are those things that we can find in the character of God and what the church is called to be. Now, not necessarily what the church is, but at least what it's called to be.
Okay. Well, and that kind of goes to another question that you found, by and large, younger adults, those under 30, 20-somethings, have more historic Christian beliefs than those older, but that they have negative views of the church. How do they reconcile that when you talk to these young adults? How do they say, I believe in the biblical God, biblical Christianity, but church is really not what I need?
You know, I think you see, and I think you're right, the numbers were pretty surprising in some ways, is that, for example, young adults actually indicated that they believe Jesus died and came back from the dead at a higher level than older unchurched adults. So when you compare younger to older unchurched samples, you end up with a higher connection to some of those Christian influences, that Christian connection. But I think there's also a higher sense of pluralism that's there. So in other words, it's okay for me to believe that Jesus died and came back from the dead, but I also might believe that, you know, so-and-so did this or so-and-so did that. So the sense that I can hold multiple truths simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that they believe these things does not necessarily mean that they are Christians or that they believe that Jesus is the only way or that he's the means of salvation.
Okay.
Nor do they necessarily connect those things of spirituality to have to be practiced out or to live out in a local church or a local congregation.
Kind of this idea of let everyone believe whatever they want situation
that
we encounter.
Sure. I call it the Oprahization of American spirituality. There's not this one sense that this is the only way.
Uh-huh.
You know, Jesus says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. Well, when we ask the question, the existence of God, you know, 81% of the younger in church say, I believe God or a higher supreme being. But,
well, sure, but that's easy.
That's easy. But mm-hmm. but that's a lower among the older unchurched adults. Mm. So, and consistently those numbers would be decaying. But here's the kicker, I think. When we ask this question, the God of the Bible is no different from the gods or spiritual beings such as in Hinduism and in Islam and Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
A majority, 58%, actually said there's no difference. So again,
wow.
They believe in the resurrection. They see the Bible as a source of help,
mm-hmm.
but they don't necessarily see this as any different than the pluralistic other religions and faiths they see out there.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to speculate a little bit on that. Something has happened between, you know, by the time these people reach their 20s, they've been told something or shown something that's given them this idea of, you know, the Islamic God, the Hindu gods all being the same. What is that? Do you have any idea what we're not doing for our kids and our teenagers that might be getting us to this point?
Yeah, I think there's a certain element where, you know, we have taught so much as to what our God is not about, and we've taught so much about what our God teaches us to not do and things of that sort. I think often we've really missed the message of what the true point of the gospel is.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really missed the message as to what we see these key foundational elements to be of theological beliefs that we hold.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, we're seeing young adults who have been raised in environments where they're walking away saying, yeah, we know we're called to be good people. We know we're called to do something to improve our community.
Mm-hmm.
We know that we're called to improve the life of others around us. Well,
mm-hmm.
the truth is they could follow a lot of paths and they would lead them to those type of teachings. Now, where we begin to be separated is where a lot of people say, yeah, we should love other people, but what about the idea of taking up your cross daily? What about this notion of not only, you know, loving your neighbor, but really taking care of the widows and the orphans, or more importantly, think about these things that are really specifically true to the nature of the gospel. That's what's separating us and separating these young adults from much of what they've believed.
Yeah, so you have this church message in many cases that's moralism. You know, I think
right.
it was Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, who once said that the church is good people standing in front of good people telling them how to be good people.
Right.
And so then what happens is, which we didn't have 100 years ago, is now their neighbors are good people, their Muslim neighbor and their Buddhist neighbor and their atheist
sure.
neighbor. And so I think this immigration, the globalization, it's really caused people to think, well, is Jesus the only way? And so I think we see among young adults this higher and this growing sense that, you know what? You know, it's good to be a Christian. Matter of fact, they say that. They say being Christian can be good. Christianity
right.
is a viable religion, all
mm-hmm.
at strong majorities, but not necessarily the Christianity we see in Scripture, which
right.
where Jesus says, I am the way and the truth mm-hmm. and the life.
So it's the being good people religion.
Yeah, well, it's a moralistic religion, and we see it in all different ways. Sometimes
sure.
it's preaching against things. Sometimes it's telling you, you know, here's five ways to have a happy life. Sometimes
mm-hmm.
it's, you know, don't drink, don't chew, whatever mm-hmm. it is,
right.
that moralistic expression. But there's not the gospel of Jesus Christ, which is both, you know, the gospel of Jesus and the gospel about Jesus. It's missing.
Okay. So taking all of the research that went into the book, how do you get young adults to that point? What did you find? What's the nugget in the book that churches can grab a hold of and go, oh, if we do that, maybe we have a chance of changing this generation?
Yeah, I think the most encouraging takeaway, is going back to what I previously said, is that when a pastor or a ministry leader goes back and begins to look at these core elements to what
mm-hmm.
young adults are looking for, and mm-hmm. with our Threads work, we often talk about four key markers, these things of community, depth, and responsibility and connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, any church, despite their size,
mm-hmm.
Despite you know, their musical style,
mm-hmm.
all of these misconceptions that we've often thrown out that said the only way that we can reach young adults is that we have mm-hmm. this big, massive building with a big budget and our pastor untucks a shirt. Well, all four
right.
of these things are not necessarily privy to that style of a church, or they may
sure.
or may not be. But
mm-hmm.
a pastor or a ministry leader or a Sunday school teacher can walk away and say, hey, I can focus on building more meaningful relationships with young adults.
Mm-hmm.
A ministry leader can say, I can really commit to teaching the
mm-hmm.
Word of God, not on the surface, but really going into the true context of the passage and jumping into it, and it being more about how we process information as opposed to just gaining more information. I mean, these things of depth, again, aren't privy to any one specific group of people.
Sure.
And then you think about something like connection, which is this thought of serving other people and social
mm-hmm.
action and global responsibility. Again, it doesn't take all the things that we've often said you have to have to reach young adults to do that, to go across the street and to serve somebody. And then the final element for us is we talk about connection, which is an intergenerational or almost a mentoring piece.
Right, which comes up a lot in
the book. Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's a great encouragement. I say in Psalm 145, one generation proclaims his greatness to the next. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're at, if you're in a urban setting or a rural setting, or if you're a big church or a little church, you can do those things. And that should be encouraging to ministry leaders.
Good. Ed, you're in and out of a lot of churches, speaking, doing interim work here and there, stuff like that. What do you see when you look out at the congregations that either encourages you or discourages you when it comes to young adults? Do you see them there?
Well, it depends upon where. You know, and that's part of what concerns me. As I go to some places and they're young adult rich. I mean, a lot of young adults there. And, you know, we're the
college
first
towns, probably.
College town. But, you know, sometimes even in not college towns. But what we find is we're the first generation really in the history of the church to worship in three generations. We got builder churches. You know, they're singing the same songs that they've been singing for 50, 60 years. A lot of gray hair. Boomer churches, you know, they're often wearing Hawaiian shirts, shoes with no socks, and singing prom songs to Jesus. And then you've got these, you know, next generation churches, you know, some people call them merging churches. You know, and part of the thing is, I think we have to be very careful that the age segmentation of the church, I don't think, is the best thing. And I think when we look at Lost and Found, one of the things we find there, looking at the churches that reach them, which is the last third of the book, is that they're not all young, cool, hip churches.
Right.
Okay.
There's that cross-generational connectedness that can, should, and I think must be there. And so I think there's a lot of encouraging news that people just need to be engaged in the conversation, brought on the journey, given the opportunity to be in community, and then we can share the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ along the way.
Okay. You mentioned, the study specifically mentions that 20 to 29-year-olds are more likely, unchurched, are more likely to be open to the idea of going to church, to Christianity. What happens during the 20s? Why is it just a natural digression of how they feel? Or by the time they hit 30, are they just completely done?
Well, we don't know because this is not a longitudinal study. So we didn't, the 40-year-olds we're asking now, we didn't ask at 20. So we don't know if it's shifted. What we know is that in this point in time, the points in time when we did the survey, there was a distinct difference between the two. I think for many people, there is a sense that there's a spiritual openness in their 20s, that the longer you're unchurched, the less open you are to spiritual things.
Makes sense.
We're making that assumption. We can't prove that statistically.
Right.
But I think it does tell us of the great opportunity that's here. You know, when I look at the stats and I see that 61% of the younger unchurched said, I'd be willing to study the Bible with a friend if a friend asked me to, 61%. By the way, a 20% drop when you look at the older unchurched. That seems to be an opportunity the church needs to seize. I think the problem is, you know, too many churches don't want to seize that. They're often unfriendly places to young adults. They often choose their, well, you know, when most churches have the choice to do so, they choose their traditions over their children. And so we see churches that are unfriendly, often, you know, dissimilar or unconnecting to young adults. There's a great opportunity here that I don't think we want to miss.
Yeah, and plus you also have this age group of, you know, this demographic of 20-somethings that are, just look at the pure stage of life they're in. I mean, they really are in a heavy transitional period out of their collegiate years if they had gone through that path, or, you know, they're moving into a new city, they're beginning new families, they're really establishing and defining their faith as something that is, if it's going to be, it's going to be something that's going to be their own, as opposed to what they've heard in the years past in their 30s, probably pretty well ingrained into where they're going to believe and what they're going to stand for at that point.
That makes perfect sense. I think what's interesting about this is that it seems, just in looking, that a church would be everything that a young adult would want it to be.
Yeah.
It's natural community, groups of people gathered. It's an opportunity to listen, and the young adults have a willingness to listen. And their spirituality is already high.
Right.
So it seems that any idea where the church is biggest challenge really is, how are they just missing this? Because it seems like a perfect opportunity.
Well, I think we're missing it because we've done such a poor job showing and sharing the love of Christ. And so the church is not defined by that kind of mission, that we're joining Jesus in his mission, sharing, serving, you know, proclaiming the gospel. But instead, we're seen as churches, places are full of hypocrites. You know, strong majority said the church is full of hypocrites, people who do one thing and say another.
And condemn on top.
And condemn. So the church has a bad reputation. Now, some of that is because we stand on moral issues that are different than the world. I get that. But I don't think that's most of it. I think most of it is that we've earned this reputation. And a lot of people want to say, well, you know, there's always going to be the stumbling block of the cross, and they want to hold that up. But I think a lot of people are tripping on the church before they get to the stumbling block of the cross.
Right.
And it's because of the way we live, and we need to live different.
Yeah, and it's certainly there's an element where you also, you know, as I travel across the country and talk with ministry leaders and pastors, there are times that we say you need to consider introducing new things into your ministry. That is always at least a possibility for some of those folks. But in many, many cases, I go into a church and I hear that what they are doing are things that are already appealing to a young adult. In many cases, it's just saying you need to go back and you need to rebrand yourself. I know we have to be careful on what we're branding and what's most important. But unfortunately, a lot of times a young adult walks into their church or walks into a church, and that church very well may be providing great things of opportunities of community. They may be having great service-related things in their weekends. All this stuff that's going on that the church is already providing, and a young adult walks in and what's said from the announcements, something about a Tuesday potluck, you know, or something that's on Sunday afternoon,
or a 9 a.m. Bible study during the
softball or the softball fellowship. Well, maybe it's time for the churches to really go back and tell what we do and why we do it. And I think we should give ourselves a little bit more credit to think young adults would actually be interested in those things.
Okay. Where do churches go from here after they read your book? How do you even start making changes like this? Any ideas, Jason?
Yeah.
Too many to count.
Yeah. I think I would go back for pastors and for ministry leaders, lay people, whoever that may be. Mm-hmm. First element is just to realize that this community piece is huge. We will never reach lost people if we don't know lost people.
That's good.
We will never reach out to the hurting if we don't really understand that people hurt. And we will never provide hope for people that are lacking direction if we don't cross paths with them. So we're just
Christ modeled
exactly
that.
Exactly right. So we're just telling ministry leaders and churches, get out into your community. Mm-hmm. Begin to provide chances for people to get an opportunity to know you, and you get a chance to know them. And then let's share the gospel with them. And realizing that ministry and Christianity doesn't have to be housed exclusively within a place of bricks and mortar, but it can really be happening in coffee shops, and it can be happening on ball fields, and it can be happening in locations all across our cities. And that's an encouragement, just to make the first step, the first introduction.
I do want to ask you, too, I feel like there's a stereotype when it comes to young adults. They're almost threatening to older generations, particularly people who have been in the ministry for years and they know what their regular church attendees look like. How do you help ministry leaders overcome this idea that I'm not cool enough to talk to young adults? I don't understand what they need to hear.
Sure. I would have, having recently passed over out of young adulthood, Jason still being a young adult. I think there's nothing more embarrassing than that, 40-year-old plus me, who's trying to be the urban hipster, and it just didn't work. I think ultimately the research does not show. Matter of fact, it's counter to that. It shows it's not about getting a cool band with black rimmed glasses. It's ultimately about relationship. It's about community. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the challenge is I think there's a fundamental error that churches make. And I think it's going to be increasingly an issue for us, is that we think that the answer is to get them to come to church. Mm-hmm. And I think we see such an overwhelmingly negative view of the church. I think what we're going to see as we reach young adults is we're going to move from attractional, get them all come to a big program. Mm-hmm. Still going to be some of that. People, still invite your friends to church. That's great. But this is going to more likely happen in relationships in neighborhoods and communities and coffee shops. And in that place, it's not, hey, look how cutting edge I am. It's, hey, let's get in a relationship together and start a conversation. Okay. So I think you're going to see that shift, and you're going to see people intentionally building relationships in community. And I think being real is more important than being cool when it comes to reaching young adults.
Right. Okay. And maybe, that boomer or senior adult, they can find some real encouragement in what they actually have to offer. I know
that
a lot of times I talk to those people in that demographic, and they say, does a 20-something really want to talk to me, and what do I have to share with them? Well, we're continually hearing from young adults to say they want to learn from those that have experienced the things that they're about to engage or they're about to engage upon. So it doesn't necessarily mean that person was super successful financially for the last 20 years, but at least they have a story. Right. They have an experience to share. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think about even real practical things. How does a 25-year-old young lady know how to cook if she's never met her mother?
Right.
How does a 24-year-old college student who's making more money in a month than he has in the last 4 years know how to
handle
do anything
that
about budgeting when he was a British Lit major? And you've got all of these things. These are These are tangible takeaways
Absolutely.
That young adults are looking for,
mm-hmm.
Things that are related to spiritual matters and also real practical matters mm-hmm. that those in the boomer mm-hmm. generation, those that are senior adults, they really do have something to share. And that should be an encouragement to them.
Mm-hmm. I kind of hear you saying that it's not so much this idea of 20-somethings who have this perception of independence, that they're needing people. And maybe it's going to be more so as you know, our culture, who is increasingly families broken down. Mm-hmm. Can you work with that? I mean, can you create families for these young adults that need something they have never seen before?
You know, that's just, I mean, it's just good scriptural language right there, Brooklyn. I mean, that's okay. Ultimately, it's the family of God.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, many of us are in families that our spiritual family will last longer than our physical family.
Sure.
And so the idea, I think, here is that in a place where family is disintegrating, one of the things that the church is supposed to be is a sign of the kingdom of God. People are supposed to look in and say, oh, that's what it looks like in the kingdom of God.
Mm-hmm.
I think they need to see restored families that are families, but mm-hmm. also new spiritual families that are made. And that's a multi-generational, cross-generational, cross-racial thing. So to me, that's just something that the church should do because it's reflective of the kingdom. I think that's going to be something that young adults, older adults, single mm-hmm. adults, married adults are all going to be attracted to.
Absolutely.
Because that's something that we deeply long for and mm-hmm. lack in today's culture.
Okay.
Yeah, and as it relates to that, you know, I like to tell folks that on the other side of every challenge is an opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And as it relates to these things of maybe relational dysfunction, if mm-hmm. let's do think for a minute, if that 20-something young man or young lady has never really seen a family modeled in a godly way in their own home, or they've mm-hmm. never really had a healthy relationship, well, what an opportunity for us as the church
sure.
to say we can provide something for you.
Mm-hmm.
We're hearing young adults talk about the velocity of life, continually talking about how fast things are moving. Well, how great is it that we can introduce them to a God that provides rest or mm-hmm. direction or hope? All of these things, again, they're opportunities on the other side of some of these things that we often only look at as challenges.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to give you both the opportunity for a last word about the book. Anything you need to say, Ed?
You know, I would just say that to me, you know, I'm not discouraged. I see this as a great opportunity. The spiritual openness, you know, everyone's searching for spirituality everywhere except, it seems, in our culture today, except the church.
Mm-hmm.
And I think ultimately we need to remember, you know, Ephesians 3:10 tells us God has chosen the church to make known his manifold wisdom. Mm-hmm. But we're not doing that particularly well in emerging generations. So I think it's time to ask the hard questions, to make the necessary changes so that we can be more faithful in our mission, because, you know, we need to see this faith that mm-hmm. faith once delivered to the saints passed on to subsequent generations. And I just hope that churches will do the hard work to make the change. We didn't write this book's not lost and we just wanted to tell you,
mm-hmm.
you know, lost and we thought it would make a good book. It's lost and found. I think this generation can be found if we'll be faithful to the proclamation of the gospel in ways that can engage them.
Okay. Jason?
Yeah, and I would just affirm what Ed said, is that, you know, there are certain complexities that come along with ministering to any generation.
Sure.
And as we're talking in this context, specifically young adults. But let's not lose sight of what amazing potential this generation also has. We begin to think about these are the folks that could be leading our churches in the days ahead.
Mm-hmm.
We begin to think about these are the people that could be community leaders mm-hmm. and political leaders. We have a generation that's highly educated, a generation that has experiences across the globe, a generation that has seen a lot of things happen in their day, and they can translate those things into amazing, amazing service for the Lord if mm-hmm. we can just connect them to the cause of Christ.
Okay. Guys, I really appreciate you coming today. It sounds like there's been a lot of work already done on this, and there's still more to come as you kind of travel and meet with people and encourage this change, this transition. I hope everything goes well. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Inside Lifeway is a production of Lifeway's Corporate Communications Department. For the latest Lifeway news, to subscribe to our e-newsletter, or for media contact information, visit the online newsroom at www.lifeway.com/news.